Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. You know, we are very, very lucky to have UW Extension offices that are located all around the state in our 72 counties, and a lot of our best Garden Talk guests are Extension horticulture educators, and today is no different. Lisa Johnson, our guest today. She's a UW Extension horticulture educator for Dane County. She's been with us many times on the program. She specializes in horticulture education for home gardeners, works with a Master Gardener program. And Lisa, always great to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry.
We really appreciate it. And, you know, somebody in your position, I know you get lots of phone calls. From your client, we'll call them clients, who are, you know, the citizens in Dane County and maybe beyond and around Dane County. What kinds of things are you hearing about now?
I'm hearing about a lot of vole damage that occurred over the winter. Voles are otherwise known as meadow mice, and we're seeing a lot of chewing on the bark of trees, particularly fruit trees, but also some vole damage in yards. We're also seeing some rabbit damage, and we're getting a lot of calls about renovating those lawns that were damaged by last year's drought.
Yeah.
So
plenty to talk about then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, the number to call if you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and I'll always love to hear from you. Don in Manawal, Wisconsin has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Don.
Hi. Kind of convenient we're talking about rabbit damage, that's why I'm calling. I had three beautiful bush cherries, sweet bush cherries, that were just ready to flower this year. And because the snow got so high, the rabbits ate all the branches off. They didn't damage the main trunks or the big branches, but all the little ones are gone. And I'm kind of wondering what would be the best way to trim that back and help them renovate.
Okay, so let me make sure that I understand this right. You've got damage that's maybe 6 to 8 inches off the ground. Is that right?
It's a little higher than that. They're a pretty good size. I'd probably have 18 inches of good solid trunk and big, thick branches. But the end of those branches are all cut off and all the small branches are gone.
Okay. All right. Well, the good news is that the plant's not going to die. Most of the problems that I hear about are girdling right at the base, which means that the cambial tissue that has the vascular tissue in it that allows the plant to take up water from the soil is all gone. And so then you pretty much have a dead plant. However, if it's the branches that have been damaged, but you still have 18 inches of good trunk tissue, you will probably be able to regenerate that. Now, unfortunately, it does mean that you're not going to get any fruit this year because cherry blossoms would have been set last year. So you're probably not going to get any blossoms, therefore no fruit. But what I would do is I would cut back just under the damaged area and make sure that you're cutting to an out-facing bud. So one that is facing outside of the bush rather than back into the bush, because then you'll get all kinds of crossing and rubbing branches. But You should be okay. It's going to take it a while to recover. Next year, I would make sure that you use some hardware cloth or something like that. I usually recommend hardware cloth instead of chicken wire, because chicken wire has bigger holes in it and voles can get in.
Yeah.
Not the rabbits, but the voles. Try and make it like 36 inches tall. And the mesh is about a quarter inch size, so make sure that you kind of, I usually use sod staples or something like that to attach it to the ground so that they can't get under it. And the problem is, of course, if you get 24 inches of snow, sometimes rabbits can still stand up on their hind legs and get the tops. But that's about the best that I can offer you. You can use some repellents in the fall, but usually they don't last
they
the whole
off.
Winter. Yeah, which is annoying.
Unfortunately.
I will be more diligent with my hunting skills next year.
Good
that works,
huh?
Too.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You could join in, too. All of our lines are filled, but wait a minute. Don just left, so there's one for you at 1-800-642-1234. Norman in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Lisa, I'd like to ask you a question that I've read comments both ways on it, and that is this. Are pine needles, when used as a mulch, are they acidifying or not? And what is the evidence, one way or the other? I was just reading a well-published garden book this morning. It said they are. I've heard it said that they're not, and I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
Probably a question of amount, maybe.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The amount of acidity that you might gain from using pine needles is pretty minuscule. So I wouldn't worry that it's going to get too acid. Now, you're in Wausau, so you've got, what, sandier soils up there?
No, we've got a kind of a clay loam.
You got a clay.
A lot of thunder land with granite, and when granite breaks down, you get clay. So we got kind of a clay soil.
Have you ever had a soil test?
Yep.
Okay, and what's your pH?
In the garden, it's been probably about 6-7, which is
perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's about right on.
I did some tests for some food plots, and that came back real acid. I can't believe it. I mean, it was like, I think it was 4-5 or 5-4 or something like that.
Well, you can grow blueberries.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't think that's right. I think something happened with that particular test, because I think soil in the woods that's not treated, we have hardwoods, maples, mm-hmm. over this granite, and I can't believe it would be that acidic.
Yeah, that's like bog, peat bog.
Something's wrong there.
But yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about using the pine needles as mulch. They're
because
actually
I use them for everything, including for seeding like carrots seed. I'll sprinkle it over the ground and just rake it lightly, and then I put a light coating of pine needles just so you can barely see the dirt,
mm-hmm.
and that works to keep the moisture in during the daytime when the sun comes out, and the carrots grow right through them. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I think pine needles are a fine mulch if you've got them.
Great, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Jenny and Minocqua, we move to you now. Hi, thanks for calling.
Well, I'm calling with a question regarding a community garden that I'm part of, and we're an organic garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been beset the last few years with just a terrible attack of powdery mildew, and it's you know, destroying our squash plants and cucumber plants and other things. And I'm wondering about suggestions and if it would help at all to trellis the squash.
Yes, it can help somewhat. One thing that you might do is make sure that, and of course, you know, you can't control what other people are planting, but for yourself, there are cucurbits, squash, and cucumbers that are tolerant of powdery mildew, which means that they get it, but it doesn't affect the yield very much. Or you can look for resistant varieties, and there's usually a code on the seed pack that will kind of tell you whether or not they are resistant or tolerant or something like that. Of course, you can always look that up on the internet as well. The other thing to do is to increase the air circulation as much as possible, not have things crowded. Powdery mildew is going to be species specific, so now, with both of the squash and the cucumber being in the same family, it might be the same strain. That would be a Brian Huddleston question. But you can also use sort of a homemade remedy as a preventative, which is a gallon of water. And into the gallon of water, you're going to mix a tablespoon of horticultural oil. And horticultural oil can be purchased at your local garden center. And then you're going to use, believe it or not, some baking soda. And you want to use, 1.5 tablespoons. Whoops, sorry. The horticultural oil is 3 tablespoons and the baking soda 1.5 tablespoons. So
baking soda.
Yeah, baking soda.
And you're spraying the leaves.
Right, you're spraying the leaves. So.
And that's it?
Yep, that's you have to shake it up pretty good, and you want to apply it in the morning. Sometimes there can be some toxic effects in the afternoon if it's really hot or something. So you may want to try that.
And you do it before the mildew would appear even.
Right, and you have to, of course, as new leaves develop, protect them as well.
All right. Thanks for all the suggestions.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Sure.
You know, we should probably put that up on our Facebook page.
Yeah, that's on Brian Huddleston's powdery mildew fact sheet.
So it's a gallon of water, 3 tablespoons of horticulture oil, and 1.5 tablespoons of baking soda.
Right.
Mix them all together, spray on the leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But it's not a curative, so if you've already got powdery mildew, it's not going to...
It's not going to kill it.
It's not going to kill it, but it'll prevent... others from coming. And of course, every time that it rains, you know, you're going to have to reapply, but it is a nice organic sort of.
And you know, in a home garden, you're probably, it's not.
Yeah, and since they're organic, you know, they don't really have a whole lot of options.
Let me ask you one thing. Is it okay to keep that? Let's say you don't use the whole gallon. Can you keep it?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah.
Okay.
At least for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, not, you know, weeks, but...
Yeah, for a little while.
I would imagine you'll have to use it rather often, so... But we recommend that for roses and some phox and other things that tend
So it won't take long to get through a gallon.
No.
Okay.
Especially not with a big leafy plant like cucumbers and squash.
All right. But that's the organic way to do it.
Yep.
Thanks again, Jenny.
Thank you.
And Linda near Hurley, hi.
Hi. It's snowing up here.
Oh.
Go figure.
Oh, that's rude.
So I'm wondering about Asian beetles.
Okay.
We have a lot of them. How do you get rid of them?
Okay. Are we talking about the Japanese beetles, or are we talking about multicolored Asian lady beetles?
Oh.
Are they red, or are they shiny and green?
No. They're not shiny and green. No, they're red.
They're red with spots.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure that I was giving you the advice for the proper insect. You know, we've had a lot of people down here calling about box elder bugs, and I wouldn't be surprised
if... They go in cycles, don't they?
Well, they do. For the box elder bugs, we've been getting a lot of them because their numbers are exacerbated by drought. They feed on seed pods of silver maples. Silver maples tend to put out more seed pods during
drought. When they're stressed,
yes, exactly. So then, correspondingly, you get more box elder bugs. And they do the same thing that the lady beetles do, which is that they congregate on your house on the west or the south side in the winter, looking for some nice, snug place to overwinter.
West or the north side. Okay. Right.
South or west.
Usually it's south or west.
Yeah, because that's where it's warmest.
Okay.
And so usually... Down here, it's about the second week of October, depending on the weather, but up where you live, it might be a little bit later. What you can do is, the first thing you want to do is make sure that your house is properly caulked, that around the windows and doors. Yeah,
oh,
you've got an old farmhouse, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's very difficult to keep them out in those situations, but if you can prevent them from getting in the first place, that's the first way to go.
All right.
And so you can also spray them while they're hanging out on the outside of your house, and you can use something like insecticidal soap.
Now I really don't see them on the outside. It's just like all of a sudden, oh, my God.
You find them in spring?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
well, all year long, actually.
Okay.
And we just need to caulk.
Yeah, that's one thing to do. And if you have vents or something, if you can put a screen over them, you know, so that will allow air exchange and so on, but that won't let the lady beetles in. Do you have house plants that you bring inside over the winter?
I do, but there aren't any beetles over there by them.
Okay, because sometimes they will travel inside with your house plants, hitchhiking. Yep.
I think they're just inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can vacuum them up. I know my brother had a ton of them in his greenhouse, and he used a shop vac to get those guys
that.
Up.
Yep.
But you have to be a little careful because if they're injured, they will release this red dye that can stain things. So that's really the best advice, to spray the outside of the house, to caulk the house, and then vacuum them up when they're inside.
There you go, Linda. A little work ahead of you. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson, our guest, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gardening on Garden Talk, obviously. We're taking a look at the drought from last year and the wet from this year with Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Certainly she can talk about pretty much anything, flowers, vegetables, the trees, the lawns. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Susan in Coon Valley. Hi, Susan.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This pertains to the Asian beetle, the orange one with the black spots. I'm wondering if there's any research on soybeans, and if soybeans enhances the number of Asian beetles you would have cluttering on your house. Since we quit growing soybeans, we have very few. And I'm wondering if there's any research on that and if soybeans actually do attract Asian beetles.
Yes, in fact, they do.
Is that right?
One of the beetles' main foods where it is native is the soybean aphid. And so in drought years in particular, we're going to have more aphids. And so, yeah, and what tends to happen for folks living out in rural areas near soybean fields is that after the soybeans are harvested, the beetles then go in search of new food sources. So that typically is going to be around your home garden or your house. And so, yeah, there is something to be said for that. Also, there's some work that shows that if you have a lot of buckthorn in woods near your house, that the multicolored Asian lady beetle also likes to overwinter on buckthorn, which is an invasive plant anyway, so
yeah.
It gets you twice.
Right. So I hadn't heard that about the...
Yeah.
So for soybean producers, is it actually a benefit to have the...
Exactly. Yeah. So for them, it's kind of a good thing.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a nuisance for the rest of us.
Gotcha. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate the call. Gary in Wisconsin Dells. Hello.
Hi. I have two quick questions. I had... about 14-foot maple tree and one of my apple tree about the same size, and the buck deer got to them and about 3/4 of the bark off both of them. But that both of them still seem to have buds. Is there anything you can do to the bark, or do I have to worry about it? I already wired the tree so they couldn't do it again, but will the trees die?
They very well might. If it's 3/4 of the vascular tissue gone, then they only have a quarter of the ability they used to have to supply their branches and leaves with water. So you might see some significant dieback. Now, sometimes what happens is that there was enough energy stored in the branches that you'll see the buds push out a little bit. They may even leaf out a little bit, but then they may die after that. Sometimes also you don't really see the damage until the dry part of the season, when there's just not enough soil moisture. You know, obviously we've got plenty of soil moisture right now. So you, again, may see some growth start I would just watch them, and you know, as branches die, you can cut those off. Usually with maples or maples and crab apples, we don't recommend doing a whole lot of pruning during the non-dormant season. Maples do tend to bleed in the early spring, but try and prune during dry weather.
Yeah.
So
my other quick question was, I had an area about an acre and a half that was jack pines, and I had them cut down, and I was thinking about turning it into a wildflower garden. Do you need a certain pH to grow wildflowers, or is it necessary to worry about it?
Depends on what kind of wildflowers you're trying to grow. Jack pines usually grow in sandy soil. Is that what you got?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I would try a prairie seed mix for for dry prairies.
I already have the seeds, and they're like purple and yellow coneflowers and Alexander and spiderwort and stuff like that.
Those are more wet or medium moisture. You might have a little trouble with those. You'd probably want things more like maybe passiflower or some of the, you know, dry prairie species, although passiflower will grow on high pH soil as well. What I would do is I would do an internet search on dry prairie species, and I know we have some great nurseries in Wisconsin that provide mixes for all different kinds of soil types, and just see whether any of your species match up with those that are offered in those kinds of mixes.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And another Gary, this one in La Crosse. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just have a question on growing carrots. The last 2 years, all I get is tops and nothing underneath.
Wow.
Below the ground. What's the problem?
Are you growing them in the same place you always grow them?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever done any crop rotation? Like a different...
No, not really.
Okay. I'm just trying to think. I'm getting a faint bell in my head about some kind of nutrient deficiency, but I could be wrong about that. I'm really not sure about the answer to that question.
You might want to get a soil test and then send in the sample and say you're growing vegetables and in particular carrots.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because then they'll be checking to see what, you know, the micronutrients or nutrients that are needed for carrots, and they'll tell you what you need to do for fertilizing.
Okay.
Yeah. You haven't added anything or amended the soil?
The soil is pretty sandy. I have been kind of adding black dirt to kind of...
Well, that's good.
Improve it, but...
Yeah, and carrots, you know, they do well in sandy loam soil. But yeah, I would get a soil test and see what's.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, this should work. I don't know. It's kind of strange just to have the tops.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking it must be some kind of deficiency, unless the tops don't look healthy either.
Yeah, Paul in Appleton. Hello, thanks for calling.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I like to grow Brussels sprouts, broccoli, and cauliflower, and I always have a lot of problems with the sulfur or cabbage butterflies, I always call them.
Yeah, the imported cabbage butterfly with the white or yellow.
Right. If I would make some frames and cover them with window screen and box in the plants, would that affect my yields at all?
That or floating row cover is one of the things that is recommended to keep those little guys out.
Okay.
They definitely can be a big problem. The one thing that you want to make sure of, though, is that in the spring that you check the area when your plants are small, because they overwinter as pupae on plant debris. So hopefully you cleaned up the area real well last year, pulled out all of the the dead plants. Yeah, but sometimes, like on compost, or if they fell off of the leaf on the way to the compost pile, you might have a few. So you just want to make sure that you're not trapping them inside your little cage. But yeah, that's a great idea. There's usually about three generations of the things that occur during the year, so it's they've got a long life where they've got a long period where they can damage your crops. So that's a good idea.
Okay, because I hate to use spray if I don't have to. I don't like spraying chemicals.
Yes, and especially on things that you're eating. I completely agree. And
I had one other quick question.
Sure.
I know over-fertilization can cause blossom end rot, and I was having trouble with that for a year or two on my tomatoes. Will excess moisture do the same?
Well, that's moisture can be an issue.
Yeah, that's the main issue is... Blossom end rot is caused by a calcium uptake problem, and if it's not usually that you don't, unless you have real sandy soil, it's not usually that you don't have enough calcium in your soil, but calcium is taken up in the water stream. So if you don't have consistent moisture in your soil, your uptake of calcium is not consistent, and the developing fruit, which uses calcium to build its cell walls, then will rot in those areas where it didn't get sufficient calcium. Now, some people will use a calcium spray on the fruits, and that's fine to do, but it's usually easier and cheaper just to keep your plants well watered. Now, at this time of year, of course, you shouldn't be planting your tomatoes outside yet anyway. And if the ground is saturated, yeah, you can have problems just because you get anaerobic conditions. But the calcium is more of an issue than nitrogen fertilizer. Nitrogen might affect how many flowers and therefore fruits you get, though,
mm-hmm.
if you over-fertilize with nitrogen.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. But if you're getting rain right along, but then you go on a two-week vacation or something, or a week vacation even. And
you want to mulch.
Yeah,
that'll help keep it moist. But one thing we do have, when we have really wet soils, the nitrogen tends to leach through.
Yeah.
So farmers have issues with that during really wet weather.
We have more callers online. And a Facebook question as well. Let's go to the Facebook page. Keith says, I took cuttings from my Georgia Jet sweet potatoes last fall. And they're growing well. I love the ivy they produce. Can I take more cuttings, plant them, and get sweet potatoes?
Okay.
No,
we can grow sweet potatoes here. There are some varieties, and my colleague Joe Mullenberg at the Dane County Extension Office is working with a group that is selling sweet potato cuttings. Or giving them away to get people to grow more sweet potatoes. They got a grant that is allowing them to do that, and you can get the cuttings from the Dane County office as long as you promise to give half of the harvest to a food pantry.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're trying to do is provide this superfood for people in low-income situations to be able to eat. Now, the thing I'm thinking of with Georgia Jet, I'm trying to remember, is that an ornamental variety or is that an eating variety?
Yeah.
If it's an ornamental variety, and it's not one I remember being an ornamental variety, but I'm not sure, then typically they don't really produce edible sweet potatoes. They'll produce little roots, but they're, little tubers, but they're...
Mm-hmm.
Really not very good. So I wouldn't recommend eating any from your ornamental sweet potatoes. But if the actual vine, we can grow in the Madison area and some places to the south as well.
We were talking about sweet potatoes the other day on the show. They're not really potatoes, and they're actually a close relative of the morning glory.
Yes, yes.
This is interesting.
Right, yeah.
We have... website, the Dane County website, is there then anything about how to raise those cuttings or how to grow those sweet potatoes?
I know that Joe has been working on a fact sheet. I think Sharon Morrissey from the Milwaukee County office also has done some work on producing a fact sheet there. I don't know whether it's up on our webpage, though, yet. I have some more information with me
Okay, we'll get that out and we'll take a look. We'll get Carrie Jo to go find it for us, and then we'll provide that information. So hang on to that.
Got it right here.
No, you got it?
Yep, you can go to the www.MadisonSweetPotatoProject.org. That's all one word.
MadisonSweetPotatoProject.org.
And the Dane County Extension Office is partnering with the River Food Pantry, Community Action Coalition, Slow Food Madison, and Equinox Community Farms. And again, it's an initiative to encourage the community to plant and harvest sweet potatoes with the end goal of donating at least half of the yield to local food pantries. So it's a way to combat hunger in our community.
Yeah, and boy, talk about a nutritious product.
Yeah.
The sweet potato is really nutritious.
Superfood.
Facebook question from Ruth. A groundhog took up residence under the garage,
Ooh.
A few feet from my raised garden beds.
Oh.
So, he's got handy. He can just sneak out and eat and then go back underneath. It ate tomatoes, peppers, cauliflower, and more last year. How do I deal with it? Do I fence in each bed?
Okay. I had my first encounter with a groundhog or that kind of animal in my yard last year. Dug a massive hole in the top of my waterfall, and I didn't know those things could climb fences.
Yeah,
they can climb fences.
They climb.
So yeah, I stuck a hose down the hole to evict him, and he did shoot out quite wet and very cross looking, and then swarmed over the fence, gave me one last dirty look, and headed off. But he came back, and my neighbor trapped him and moved him to another location. I would have to check and make sure. I don't believe that they're protected if you're in a rural area. You know,
they're not protected if they are causing damage on your property.
Yeah.
You can't go on someone else's property.
And dispatch them. But, relocation, though, is definitely an option with those. You just want to make sure that it doesn't have any kits in the den with it, because if you have little dead ones, that's that's going to be an issue.
We have Vicki in Port Washington, I believe, up next. Hi, Vicki. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. I have a solution for those fun little ladybug beetles that get into your windowsills all the time.
Great.
All you have to do is take a bay leaf, crush it up, sprinkle it in your windowsill. It gets rid of 85 to 95% of the lady beetles.
And wow.
Back.
Okay,
wow.
So crushed up bay leaves.
Yes, and it doesn't take much. A half a bay leaf, in a windowsill is all it takes.
What do they do? They just not show up?
They just not show up.
I've heard of using bay leaves as repellents for various types of insects, but I wasn't aware that lady beetles didn't like those.
Oh.
I heard it, I tried it, and I might get one or two, but I do not get the half a dozen to two dozen that you normally would suddenly have show up in your windowsill.
Wow.
Thanks, Vicki.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
It very much. And, all right, bay leaves. Who'd have thunk? Lynn in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Lynn. Thanks for calling. Lynn, are you there?
I'm here.
What's on your mind?
Well, I purchased some strawberry plants, and I'm not sure if the fruit flies came from that, but I am having issues with fruit flies around the strawberry plants and now also some of my other house plants. I have tried using apple cider vinegar with a little dish soap in it, and that doesn't seem to be doing anything. Do you have any suggestions?
I'm wondering if you have fungus gnats instead of fruit flies. So these strawberry plants are ones that you've started inside?
Yes.
Okay.
And they're in one of those hanging
baskets. Okay.
Yeah.
That actually sounds more to me like fungus gnats. They're about the size of fruit flies, but they have smaller eyes. and they feed on organic matter in the soil, and they can be really hard to get rid of. One thing you can do is try and let things dry out as much as possible between waterings. Another thing that you can do that is organic for fungus gnats is you can get a raw potato. You can put slices of it, lay it on the soil, and the larvae of the fungus gnat will come, and they're attracted to that carbohydrate source, and they'll burrow into it. And you should be able to actually see them. So you leave it there about 24 hours. Then you pick up the slices, put them in a Ziploc bag that you can close and dispose of them. They usually don't recommend spraying for them, but I know they're quite annoying. We had some in a worm bin in my office, and I said the first time that I snuffled up one of those things that I was evicting the worm bin, and sure enough, that eventually happened. But you do often see them in houseplant soil, particularly if it's got a lot of organic matter. So I wouldn't be surprised if it had come in with that. And if you do get really high populations of those larvae, they can start feeding on the roots of your plants, too, and you really don't want that.
Because I'm losing plants, so that's what I'm thinking is happening.
Yeah. Are you not full-size plants, though, right?
No.
Seedlings?
Some that I've just started off from, you know, just re-rooted and my strawberry plants, half of them are gone now.
Wow. When you pull them out, what do they look like? What do the roots look like?
I can't even get them out of the ground, but the ground is pretty wet, so I bet you've got to be right.
There are some other things that you can do. If you can get a granular organic product, it's a Bacillus thuringiensis type. I didn't know whether I'd be really thrilled about using it on plants that you're going to eat, but it is considered organic, and so you could try that as a drench. But if you can keep the soil dry. And try those potato slices. That would be my first recommendation.
All right. Give that a shot. And Lynn, thank you very much for calling. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. You know, Lisa, I expected almost by this time that someone would have seen some dandelions out there.
Oh, yeah, there may be against the south side of the house and so on.
I wouldn't doubt it a bit. The first dandelions of the season there, of course, a sign that spring is actually sprung. And for for some homeowners, it means war. And I've got a fun piece here. Writer Catherine Jago describes her battle for control of the lawn.
Sometime in April, the yolk-yellow stars of dandelions burst in the grass. So vivid after our months of color starvation that my heart lifts, even though I know what's coming. They would have been welcome for more than just their color in harder times. Laura Ingalls mentions gathering the leaves for salad in her Wisconsin childhood. They come up with the sorrel well before the lettuce, the first edible greens. Once they've seduced me with their irresistible splashes of citron, they get down to business. While I'm strolling around, luxuriating in the mild weather, awash in goodwill, and reluctant to start the season's work of weeding, they put in a bid to take over the world. They send up improvised launching pads that overnight sprout into downy, star-studded globes of tender fuzz. I have the sense, looking at dandelion seed heads, of staring into galaxies. But they're really an army of parachutists. The places where they have been left to their own devices are a sign of what they have in mind, absolute domination. I become temporarily obsessed with dandelions. Their beauty, their tenacity, their greed for life. The name matches their fierceness. It means lion's tooth. They are hell-bent on raising their ethereal offspring, hoisting them up to send them out into the world, airy, light, unburdened. Their reproductive urgency is daunting. Every year I think, I can't do it. This year I'll use Roundup. But the idea of rounding up dandelions is a joke. Each year I can't quite bring myself to poison them, although I have dark, dandicidal fantasies. Instead, I pull out my dandelion rooter and go defeatedly to work. As I dig them up, I think grimly of eating them. But my relationship with them has become so personal, it seems like vengeful cannibalism. Mostly, the best I can do is to get a chunk of root. They are so legion, I can't hope to get the whole thing every time. Although sometimes when the soil is soft and damp, I can get the blade in at just the right angle and ease out an entire taproot. For 3 weeks, I have blisters on my thumbs, dirt under my broken nails, my back aches, and at night, I dream of dandelion roots. The patch on the terrace by the road is simply too dense to uproot, so at night, my 9-year-old and I go out and laboriously pick all the seed spheres. Each day, a whole new crop materializes out of thin air. At some imperceptible point in mid-May, the dandelion seed phase will pass and the grass takes over when the fireflies come and the mosquitoes. Sleeping dragons, they haven't woken yet. It's still Eden out there. There's a purity and freshness to the air. The dusks are deep blue, all the summer still ahead of us.
Oh, Catherine Jago, she's quite the writer, isn't she?
She sure is.
Oh,
definitely,
man.
Is.
Well, she's a translator, poet, author of the chapbook Casting Off. And Erica Janik, by the way, produced that piece for Wisconsin Life. It's produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. I always enjoy these pieces. They're really fun to listen to, talk about a variety of things. And you can find out some more. Actually, go to wisconsinlife.org. We have it up on my Facebook page if you want to get a link to it. And lots of things other than dandelions, but that was kind of a perfect one, it seemed like to me, for Garden Talk. And appreciate having it. We had a couple of tips. Kevin emailed to say that Georgia Jet sweet potatoes are great, so they are really good ones.
Oh, good. Okay.
I grew them, very nice, big, luscious sweet potatoes. And then Donna sent a woodchuck solution under the shed. She had one under the shed on her land, and she put well-used kitty litter in the hole.
Oh.
And that...
Well, that I have lots of. If my free friend comes back in the yard, I may...
That's worth a try.
Yeah.
Just dump it right down the old hole, and away it went, apparently. So thanks, Donna.
Good, I can't blame it.
Good tip. Yeah, I'd leave, too.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Molly in Harvard, Illinois has a question for us, so let's go there. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live on a 5-acre farm that's outside of Harvard, right near the Wisconsin border. And over the last 20 years that I've been here, the box elder trees and the silver maples that have been on the property that are huge, they're gradually dying and falling over. So obviously something has to replace them. And I wanted to see if you could recommend some trees that will grow well in this area that will grow to a substantial size and be hardy.
Sure. You may want to try hickory trees. They are native to that area. You may want to try hackberry. That's another one. Now, if your soil is really alkaline, you may have some problems with that. Kentucky coffee tree is another great.
It's a pretty one.
Yeah, shade tree. You want to make sure that you get a male variety, though, so that you don't get the pods. Is this in a woodland setting, or is this on a lawn-type setting?
The trees I'm speaking of are more on the lawn around the old farmhouse.
Okay.
There are also some trees in a woodland area to the west.
Okay. Are you interested in any shorter trees as well, or?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Amelanchier, the service berry, is a beautiful tree in all four seasons, so that's one that I could recommend as well. If it is a lawn setting, the one problem with hickory, of course, is that you're going to get the nuts, which can be nice as long as the squirrels don't get them first. But they are kind of messy.
Yeah.
And the Kentucky coffee tree, if you get the male, it won't have the pods, but sometimes the long rachises of the compound leaves can stick in the lawn. There are, you know, oaks certainly are great, but then you get acorns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And honey locust is kind of overused, but that's a possibility as well for lighter shade. And finally, you might want to look at ginkgos. Ginkgos are not native, but they certainly are a beautiful tree.
Do you recommend any maple varieties?
You could use some of the Freeman maples, depending on your soil type. If you have more acid soil, the red maples will do well, as long as it's not real wet. You could use one of those. The Freeman maples, sorry?
Yeah, those.
The Freeman maples are a cross between red and silver, keeping the best characteristics of both, where you get a little bit faster growth rate, but you get good fall color. So there are a number of those out there. And sugar maple, of course, is always a beautiful tree. You might want to try Legacy, which is tatter resistant.
Okay. Lastly, do you recommend spring or fall planting more?
If you are using bare root trees, spring. If you're using plants that are bald and burlapped, I still would recommend spring if you can, but you can plant those later in the season.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot
for
calling. Appreciate your call. Lots of good choices there. Helen in Madison. Hello.
Hello. I really appreciated that dandelion.
Wasn't that neat?
Yes. But my question, I have another question about carrots. When I grow them, they give lots of small, almost misshapen roots instead of one nice carrot. And what can I do about that?
Okay. Do you have heavy clay soil or rocky soil?
No, it's actually very nice gardening soil.
Okay.
Thinks I over-fertilize. I wonder.
Well, that could certainly be. A lot of the root crops don't like a lot of fertilization. They do like their calcium and phosphorus, and some of them have a higher boron requirement. So it may be a micronutrient thing again. Probably if you check about having a soil test. That might help you as well.
And you thin them out really well?
That's another thing, yeah.
Oh, yes,
okay.
I do. And if you have time for another question, how can you take care of voles in the lawn?
Voles in the lawn, okay. We tend to have more problems with voles during the when we have heavy snow. Now, we are talking about voles and not moles, correct?
Correct.
Okay. They can be difficult to control, but we do have a great publication at the Learning Store on meadow mice, which are voles, and it talks about some different things that you can do, like keeping the grass shorter, trying to eliminate wood piles or other places that they might hang out. Certainly if you have a cat or a dog, that can help you a little bit. But usually the damage that you see in the lawn in the spring after a heavy snow type of winter like we've had now, generally your lawn will grow back over that, particularly if you have lots of Kentucky bluegrass. So that usually isn't something that is a long-lasting problem. But if you have them girdling your woody plants, that's a bigger problem.
That is a big problem.
Yeah. And you can certainly put out traps for them if you don't have cats or, you know, children that might get into those traps. I don't like to recommend poison baits because I do worry about other wildlife eating the poisoned voles.
I've gotten them in mouse traps.
Yeah. Yeah. You can use just a plain mouse trap if you hide it well enough. Hopefully your kids and cats won't get into them.
Lisa Johnson, our guest today. Lisa is a Dane County UW Extension horticulture educator, specializes in horticulture education for the home garden. Larry Mueller on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Gardening can be such a pleasure, can it? Depending on where you are in the season, there are different things to take care of. Early spring, we're in that right now, seems to bring more gardening tasks than there are hours in the day, sometimes depending on how big your garden area is. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network and this edition of Garden Talk. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, our guest for today. She specializes in horticulture education for home gardeners and works with the Master Gardener program as well. Lisa, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks for coming by. And we have a lot of callers online. The number, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. You can also post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. But Dave and Cobb has been waiting a while, so let's go to Dave. Thank you for waiting.
Good afternoon to the both of you.
To you as well.
I'm thinking about putting cantaloupe in, or mustard.
Yep.
And I want to know how to keep them from rotting on the bottom, like I did this a couple of years ago.
Okay, so when the spot where they were laying on the ground were rotted, they rotted there?
Yeah, if they were touching the ground, yes.
The fruits? You mean the actual cantaloupe fruit?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay. If you can put them on a board, or if you can raise them up off the ground somehow, you can set them on straw or something like that. That will usually prevent that sort of thing from happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had some little boards,
yeah.
Frankly.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't raised the cantaloupe in a long time, but I had a bunch of little boards that I put them on.
Yep.
It worked pretty good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there you go, Dave. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Camille in Frankfort, Michigan, your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I live in the northern part of the Lower Peninsula, but I have a garden in the Detroit area, which is quite a bit warmer. And there are some peonies there, which I would like to split and bring up here. Some mm-hmm. I'd like to bring some of them up here. What is the best time of year to do that?
Fall. And early fall. So usually at the end of August or early September here in the Madison area, you might have to, do you know what zone you're in there?
I don't. No.
Okay. Actually, if you're closer to the lake, you might actually be in a warmer zone than we are. But generally between the end of August and the 1st and 15th of September is a really good time.
Okay. Yeah, I am by the lake.
Okay.
I am by Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you're probably good.
You're good. Yeah. And be very careful when you're transplanting. Peonies don't like to be moved and they have somewhat brittle roots. So when you move them, you know, try and keep the root ball as intact as you can. I'd have like a bag or a pot standing by to put them into. You don't want to do it when the soil is really dry. And when you replant them, make sure that you don't get them too deep. You want to have a couple of those buds, which are referred to as eyes, within an inch of the top of the soil.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dan in Fond du Lac, hi.
Hello, Lisa. Say, Lisa, I have a question. You were talking about bulls before. Do they kind of look like a mouse with a long nose?
They have kind of a blunt nose and a shorter tail.
Kind of a sharp, pointy tail.
Yeah. Okay. I used to catch them all the time in my dog's dish. I had a large stainless steel dish, and they would go in after the food as long as there was something alongside the dish that they could get up to it, and they'd get in the dish, and then they couldn't get out.
Oh.
And I probably caught 40 or 50 of them.
Good Lord.
Yeah, it's a good way to get rid of them.
Yeah. Dog dishes. Okay, well, keep that in mind.
Stainless steel, though, where they can't climb up the side.
Yeah, plastic, they probably could get their little claws in there. And there are also, hopefully you didn't find any shrews. Those have a pointier nose and
a
really short tail.
It was a shrew then.
Okay, really short tail? Yeah, those can be, they have a poisonous bite. So, those are not nice. And I'm glad you got rid of them before your dog had an encounter.
Yeah, it did a good job on getting rid of them.
Thanks, Dan.
I would take the dogs out in the morning and they would be in the dish, so I would get rid of them then.
There you go.
Okay, thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. All right. Let's see here. Robin in Portage up next. Hi, Robin.
Hey, Lisa and Larry.
Hi.
Nice to talk to you.
Nice
you
to talk to you.
Well, maybe that gentleman has saved me.
You got to get stainless steel dog bowls.
I guess. In fact, I've gotten to the point where I didn't think I would garden at all this year because of the shrews and the moles.
Oh.
I am just totally inundated with them. They've just increased over the years, and I have tried everything on the market I could possibly buy, and nothing has worked. Even home remedies. I've heard of bubble gum. You name it. I've heard about it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing seems to work. Do you have, other than the dog dish, I don't have any dogs.
You get a dog dish anyway.
I have a cat, but he doesn't go outside, but I wonder if they'd go for cat food. Maybe.
they very well might, and you might be able to use some of the, not that we want to have a lot of cat feces lying around, but sometimes cat urine or cat feces will deter various things, but I'm wondering about the habitat that you have for them. What kind of soil do you have?
Well, I have it's sandy loam.
Okay.
I've had good gardens, beautiful gardens, until these critters started moving in on me.
Do you have a wood pile that they maybe?
No, but I am near woods.
Okay.
And marsh. Years ago, I never used to have them, and now for the last 5 years. In fact, they've gotten so bad that around the foundation of my house, you can see that the soil has dropped like 3-4 inches.
Well, that may have just been a settling, which you might want to take care of anyway, that could lead to some moisture
foundation
problems.
Issues, yeah.
Some moisture problems.
But they are digging right around the foundation. Of course, that's not the only place. They're in the lawn, they're in the garden, they're everywhere.
Do you have a lot of Japanese beetles there or June bug problems in your lawn?
No, not really.
Okay.
I know you're going to lead toward grubs.
Yep, exactly.
I'm sure there are some. I have more weeds than I have grass, actually.
Lots
of dandelions.
Now, you have moles, not voles, correct?
No, they are not voles. I know the difference. I have shrews and moles.
Okay.
In fact, I've killed some of them by hand with my pitchfork.
Yeah.
People, I'm sure, watching think I'm nuts, but...
Well, I understand. There is a harpoon trap that you can buy that our wildlife specialist, David Drake, recommends for getting rid of moles that you set over the tunnel.
I've done that.
Yeah. And
you know
and
what?
That,
they get used to it and they go right around it.
Oh.
They do, honest to goodness.
Did you ever try the basket approach with the bacon?
No.
Well, there's a...
Is that a trap?
That's what you do is you open a basket, like an old big basket.
Yeah.
And you get yourself a...
Like wicker?
A rat trap or a trap. And you put some bacon on it, some cooked bacon, and you put that over the runway, and you open the hole of a used runway, lay the trap in there, and then cover it all with a basket.
Oh, I see.
And one fellow who called, I think he killed 21.
He put bacon?
Bacon, because they smell the bacon, they'll come out of the...
Bacon or cooked bacon?
I'd cook it a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because it'll smell really good underneath that basket.
And it's dark under the basket.
And it's dark, yeah. And there's nothing else going to come and knock it. So
I've used pails in the past, but I've never tried bacon. I guess I was using some bait at that point.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, bacon, a little bacon and set into the trap.
Right.
And as what's the trap called again?
Just a like a rat trap.
Oh, a rat trap. Okay.
First, then you have to dispose of the prisoner later.
No, I don't really care. I don't care how I kill him or how I get rid of him. I don't.
I understand.
People
yeah.
have reported very good luck with that.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting.
I have tried that kitty litter and laid it on the soil. That didn't do any good.
Okay.
Maybe like that other tip you got about putting some kitty litter down the holes, maybe that would...
Well,
give it a shot anyway.
Yeah, give it a shot anyway.
Couldn't hurt.
Good luck. I'm sorry you're having so much trouble, Rob.
Yeah,
I appreciate your call.
That's too bad.
Maybe other people have some ideas as well about what to do. We'll find out. Jim in the UP, it's on to you now. Hi. Jim, are you there? Oh, we must have lost Jim. How about Steve in Winter, Wisconsin? Hi, Steve.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a pair of Corbin apple trees, which I planted, I think, about 8 years ago. Sadly to say, I think I only spaced them about 8 feet apart, 9 feet apart when I planted them, but I thought I'd just mention that. But what the situation is that up until, 3 years ago, they didn't produce much. And so at that time, they must have been about 5 years old. So then 2 years ago, I did a pretty decent job, I thought, pruning. I don't think I overextended, took too much off. And which led me to last year, I didn't get one apple or anything on either tree.
Okay.
So look at me. And just a few even further, as far as I understand, they're not self-pollinators, yes.
Yeah.
So I think about 5 or 6 years ago, we did plant a Jonathan a little further away than 8 feet. And then anyway, something came and trampled that. And I'm one of these people that I'm not going to pull it. I want to see what happens. So it's basically almost starting to come back up on a shooter form. So, and it's bearing leaves at least. And so I assume that might help in pollinating. But that's the gist of the whole story.
Do you have any crab apples, any flowering crab apples?
Yes, I do.
Okay. The thing is, with apples, generally you need two different cultivars, and often, as long as the crab apple is not one like spring snow that doesn't produce any fruit and because of pollen issues, and it blooms at the same time as your Cortlands, it should work to help pollinate them. What time of year did you do your pruning?
The branches might have just begun to bud. Either that, I don't remember exactly, but it was spring. It was right around now, and I don't think I got them too late. I don't think they quite budded yet, but it was probably close.
Okay. For shaping types of pruning, yeah, you should do that during the dormant season. But be aware that the buds that produce the flowers, that produce the fruit, are going to have been formed last year. So if you want to preserve as many of them as possible, then you might need to do your pruning right after the plants flower. But again, the normal time to prune, and we do have a great publication on pruning and training apple trees at the Learning Store website, learningstore.uwex.edu. If you just punch into the search box, training apples or pruning apples. And we also have a growing apples publication, a whole bunch of apple stuff there. But last year, I'm kind of thinking probably what happened is that the blossoms got frozen or something on that order, because we had an awful problem last year with things coming out early, and then they got nailed in May. So I'm guessing that that might have been the problem. Your pruning may have exacerbated it. Maybe there were less blossoms to begin with. Another thing that could have happened is we're having continuing problems with not having enough pollinators, so not having enough bees. And if you don't get pollination, then you don't get fruit.
Yeah. So or all of the above.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was thinking too now to go ahead and prune again this year. Don't.
I would say at this point, don't.
No, let it go.
Let it go this year and see whether you get flowers. And if you do get flowers, that's great. And if you still don't get fruit after that, then it's probably either a weather or pollination issue.
All righty.
All right, Steve, thank you very much
good
for calling.
That.
Yeah, appreciate it. We have, by the way, Judith put up the sweet potato link for raising, for, you know, kind of growing sweet potatoes and the Sweet Potato Project in Dane County. So there's a link to that on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and also the powdery mildew recipe for organic gardeners, how to deal with powdery mildew, or at least before it comes, not after it's there, but to kind of prevent it. We've got that up on our Facebook page as well at the Larry Mueller Show, so you can go there and get that. And Sue in Appleton, hi, thanks for calling.
I have a question about sweet potatoes.
Sure.
When I was younger, I used to grow sweet potatoes in a dish of water in the house as a house plant, and I don't seem to be having very good luck trying this again now. And I'm wondering if the varieties may be different, or if there's something about the light conditions, or that I should be know about, or when to start them to get this working for me again.
Yeah, I've not heard of people growing them inside. Generally, they need a lot of sun.
They grow beautiful vines.
Yeah.
You may need more light is my guess, although there may be something about new varieties.
I was growing them in a north window when I was a child, but now it seems that I put them in my light garden thinking, too, that they might require more light, and they got little tiny leaves. But they used to get these big, beautiful leaves if you just set them in a dish of water let them grow like that, and they made a lovely houseplant.
That's probably a variety. It could well be,
a varietal difference.
Some combination, but almost for sure it's a variety.
Yeah.
If it was, if it's been years and years ago, if you did it as a child.
Yeah, maybe they don't make that.
That variety may be just an old variety that that
that's
would
what I sort
good
of
for that.
That.
Yeah. So you might go to Seed Savers Exchange and take a look at some in Decorah, Iowa. If you can go online to your Facebook, go online to Seed Savers Exchange, you might just look up some of the varieties that they've got. We have it's seedsavers.org, as a matter of fact. That's all you have to type in. And I bet there are some old varieties that you might just give it a try and see if one of those older varieties won't work better for you.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And email from Karen. Last year she didn't fertilize her strawberries after fruiting because the heat and drought had stressed the plants so much in the Sparta area. Since they don't produce as much fruit if fertilized in spring, what should I do about fertilizing them this season?
Well, with spring bearing and not the ever bearing or fall bearing types, you should fertilize them after they produce. So I would wait until they've produced in May or June and fertilize them then, just like you regularly do.
All right, Jim from the UP. Hello.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I understand I'm under a time constraint.
Anyhow, we live, unlike Michigan, we have a fairly sandy soil, you know, a minimal amount of topsoil across our lawn. But we have five maple trees, and over the, they've been in for about 8 years. The last 2 to 3 years, they'll bud out, and then all of a sudden, the buds just kind of dissipate, and we get no leaf foliage whatsoever on the trees. This past fall, we put the fertilizer sticks around them based on the size of the trees, and they run range from probably a 3-inch trunk to about a 4-inch trunk. Any suggestions?
Well, usually fertilizer is not going to help in that. We usually don't recommend fertilizing trees too much. However, if your soil is really poor, that might help. It sounds actually like it might be verticillium wilt. What you might want to do is send a sample into the Madison campus to have it checked for that particular disease. You know, when you have dying back sporadically and things not coming out, that sounds like some sort of disease to me.
Yeah, the other, and given the timing of it, it's also could be a how they were planted issue too, because
yeah,
if they weren't planted
too deep. Yeah.
They were planted too deep, or if they were planted so that the roots were not kind of spread out at planting time, you get a situation where the roots start going around each other and
girdling.
Strangle and girdle, and it's usually around 5 to 8 years when that happens.
Yep.
So.
Yep. If your tree trunks look straight when they, like a telephone pole going into the ground instead of having a nice flare at the bottom, that's a good indication that they're too deep.
Yeah.
So try looking at both of those issues.
So, lots of things to look at there. We had another suggestion for melons. Jenny on Facebook says she puts an empty tuna can under each muskmelon to keep them off the ground so they don't rot.
Oh, that's good idea.
That's not a bad idea. And Harriet Muscadet, what did Harriet say? Oh, I lost her. Can you compost birdseed shells, mostly sunflower, left over underneath the bird feeders?
I wouldn't. I'm remembering something from Brian Huddleston saying that there's a fungus that can be an issue in bird seed.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what it is, but
if you did, you'd want to be composting it.
Hot
compost.
Yeah.
For sure. Lisa, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to
another visit. Okay.
Appreciate it very much. Lisa Johnson, Dane County, UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Great to have her along, and thank you so much for listening in. Monday, we'll talk physical therapy with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenall. Always look forward to their visits. So tune in on Monday. But, hey, stick around. There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.